If you are looking for even more help and guidance on your breakup, I have a few different options for you to take your healing to the next level. I have 4 different online courses depending on what stage of the breakup that you're in, from beginning all the way into moving on after heartbreak. Or you can bundle all of my courses together and use the code PODCAST to get $25 off my course bundle. I also have my 30-day no contact challenge to help hold you accountable in going no contact with your ex. And we have our free Facebook group, Healing Hearts Club, where you can connect with other people going through breakups all over the world. To learn more about any of these resources, head to the show notes where you can learn more about my courses, take the quiz to figure out which course is best for you, or join the Facebook group. And don't forget to use the code PODCAST to get $25 off my course bundle. A question I get asked all the time is it normal for a breakup to feel more intense during my period? And the answer is yes. PMS is already so hard to deal with, and then you throw a breakup into that. And I know for me, PMS can make me feel anxious, exhausted, starving, and sad. Not a great combo. And that's why I love using and recommending Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth, which can make PMS easier to manage and has helped reduce those anxious feelings and low moods I experience around my period. And fun fact, a bottle is sold every 24 seconds. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens, which help the body adapt to any stressors like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. Hormones can make us feel so out of whack, and I agree with the most commonly used phrase in their 17,000 reviews, which is that it does make you feel like yourself again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code HEARTBREAK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code HEARTBREAK for 15% off today. Welcome to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast with your host, Breakup Bestie, aka me, Kendra. Breakups are hard, but you don't have to do it alone. Each week, I will be taking you through a different topic as it relates to breaking up, healing from heartbreak, growing in your single life, dating, and getting back into happier and healthier relationships. The goal of this show is to provide support, hope, tips, and to remind you that above all, this too shall pass. Welcome back to another expert episode of the podcast. I am extremely excited and honored to have today's guest on. Today I have Nejwa Zabian, who has been on my dream list of guests for a long time now. And anytime I've done a suggest a guest thing on my Instagram, she always comes up. So I was so delighted to be able to chat with her and gain some of her wisdom. If you don't know who she is a Lebanese-Canadian activist, author, speaker, and educator. She has several books out. Her most recent one that we talk about a lot is called The Only Constant, and it talks about change, how we approach change that happens to us, change that we initiate, and changes that we want to make. And as you can imagine, this highly relates to breakups. Breakups are big changes that we usually don't want. Even if you were the one that ended the relationship, it probably wasn't something you necessarily wanted to do. So we talk about how being true to yourself is the best way to navigate change. We talk about why change is so difficult. We talk about why denying versus accepting change can be really harmful and stunt our growth in a lot of ways. Nejwa shares a lot of personal experiences through this. She talks about why she decided to write this book. So I highly recommend you all go out and get The Only Constant. I read it and loved it, and I know you guys will too. Welcome, Nejwa, to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast. It is beyond an honor to have you on the show. I was telling you before we started recording that you've been on my dream list of people to have on for a while now. So this is very exciting for me, and I'm sure all the listeners too.
I'm really excited to have this conversation with you. Ever since we got this sorted out, I was like, this is going to be a great conversation. So I hope everybody listening can walk away feeling like something inside of them changed.
Oh, yeah. I love that. And I'm sure it will, because I've got that already from reading your book. And I would love to just start off by hearing from your perspective. What inspired you to write a book about change? And I have quotes written from your book of your perspective shift, but obviously it required a big perspective shift on your end and then being able to write about that. Can you walk us through that a little bit?
Yeah. So I feel like when we talk about our journeys and how we've gotten to a point where we are healed and just have that inner peace that everybody wants, we try to look at the whole of our lives and all the experiences we went through, the struggles, and say, you know, I went through all of that, but now I'm great. Like, I'm grateful that I went through all of that, because if it wasn't for it, I wouldn't be here right now with this. There is an element of trying to say it's a great life, it's just so perfect. And then you forget that part of being a healed person is that you are continuously healing and you are continuously going through things. And the things that happened in your past never really fully go away. Unless you fully sit with them and resolve them, they might even still visit you from time to time, because that's how being human works. So, with The Only Constant, I really wanted to document my journey getting to a point where I started looking at my life as raw and in a much more realistic way than I ever did before, because I didn't want to embellish anything. I didn't want to say, like, look at this success story, because to me, the success story is that I'm an authentic person and I'm living my life authentically from my view. So right before I started writing, I had signed the book deal for this book and the one after it. And, you know, Welcome Home had such a warm reception from everyone, and it did so well. So I knew that I needed to open up a lot more about my life and about the way that I not only make sense of things with my logic and through my words, but also how did I actually get through things? Like, how did I actually move through the struggle? I didn't want to preach. I didn't want to say, this is what you have to do. I wanted to say, this is what I did, and this is what I think would help you if you follow these steps that are obviously going to be unique to you based on how you utilize them and based on who you are and where you are in your life. So after I had signed the deal, I knew the book was going to be about, you know, big transitions in life and how do we deal with those? Like, you just graduated from school. I was about to graduate with my doctorate. So what's next? You just ended a relationship. What's next? You just learned how to set healthy boundaries with family and coworkers and friends. What's next? Because now you're a new person. You just lost someone you love to a death. What's next? And where that came from was the losing someone you love to a death is around that time that I was like finishing my dissertation. My grandma passed away and I fell to my knees. I write about it a lot in The Only Constant. I actually dedicated the book to my grandma. And the journey of grief that I went on was so, I felt like a different person afterwards, which I think so many people can relate to that feeling. Not a different person as in I don't recognize this person that's coming forward, but it was more like my true self came forward and said, what are you doing with your life? Like, you had this beautiful, unconditional, pure love available to you at all times, and you were spending time focused on school and work and all these other things in life that seem so insignificant when you lose someone that you love to a death. Like, it's like, what really matters in life? It's something inside of me woke up and said, you have a limited time on this earth. And if you're going to continue spending your time accomplishing and achieving and just focusing on the next big thing that you want to do, then you're going to lose track of the most important thing in life, which is to be present with the people that you love and care about. So going through that really big change and going through the change of school coming to an end, because to me that symbolized the end of a journey where I was constantly running after my worth, really. You know, if I get to the highest level in school that I can, then somewhere in the back of my head, I'm making my parents proud. I'm proving to everyone in my life, whoever made me feel like I wasn't smart, or that I didn't know what I was doing with my life, that I am smart and that I do know what I'm doing with my life. And it's like you get to a certain age where you look back at your younger self who was trying so hard to prove your worth in that way, and you say, I wish you had a little more compassion towards yourself, because it's not those accomplishments that make you worthy. It's your core, it's your essence, it's the good that you do in the world for yourself and for those around you. It's the love that you have to give. It's your being, it's your who you are. So I knew that on a logical level, my worth isn't dictated by what I do, it's by who I am, it's the fact that I exist. But I knew that when I finished school and I woke up the next morning, my mind was going to be like, we don't have 1,000 things to do, so how do we feel like we are getting something done? How do we feel like we are getting somewhere in life? How do we get that constant hit of a check mark on your page and I finished this thing? How do you feel productive and accomplished and like you deserve the life that you're actually living? So I knew I was going to go through that struggle, because as I say in The Only Constant, if your body spent X number of years operating on a certain system, whether it's a reward system or a fear-based system or a consequence-based system, it's going to take time for that to change. It's not enough to just know it. Like, people listening to this episode aren't just going to listen to it and say, oh my God, that's amazing, my life has changed, just because you heard it. So that'd
be nice,
right? So that shift in perspective could start happening when you hear something logically, but to actually change your life from the inside out, literally, your body needs to go through the change. It needs to experience what it's like to not have that thing it was addicted to, which may have been, I need to please everyone around me. I need my parents to be proud of me. I need to prove to people and the world that I am somebody. That's an addiction that we have, that we keep going for things that will prove to us that that thing has been proven by us. So it takes time to cleanse your system of that. And it takes time to discover why it is that you began operating in that way in the first place. Like, what taught you and who taught you, and at what point in your life did you start learning that unless you got super high grades in school, and unless maybe you looked a certain way and dressed a certain way and had a certain way of behaving and speaking, unless you have all those things, then something's wrong with you? When did you learn that, and how, and from who? And when you start discovering why you operate the way that you operate, like what your autopilot is. I just had an Instagram live and I brought up this story. I was with my friend not too long ago and she was filling up the coffee machine with water and the lid fell in. And immediately she said, I'm so stupid. And I looked at her and I was like, no. Wow. I said, I know you don't think that of yourself, but that doesn't come out of nowhere. That there's something inside of you that is so hypersensitive to you making any kind of mistake. I said, would you ever have said that to me if I was filling that up and I put the lid accidentally fell in? She goes, no. And she teared up immediately. And I said, I used to do that to myself all the time. Like, if I made a little tiny mistake, I would say, oh, you're so stupid. And then at once I became aware of it and understood that it came from a place of believing that if I made any kind of mistake, that it meant something was wrong with me. And so I had to uncondition myself from those beliefs at my core, because again, sometimes you know something, but it's how do you live day to day with that knowledge, with making those changes? So I started reflecting after those two big changes happened in my life. What do I actually want my life to look like? So if I looked back at my life in 20, 30, 40, 50, I don't know how many more years I will live. Maybe it's five. But if I were to look back at my life at the end of my life, what kind of life would I say I am so happy that I lived my life in that way. And what kind of changes do I need to make in my life right now to lead to that life? So these three big themes emerged, and it was changes we don't choose, changes we choose, and changes we need to make. And I wanted to help every person who's going through any kind of change. And I think most of us struggle mostly with the changes that happen to us, like the death of a loved one, like a breakup, like getting fired from a job that you thought was your dream job, like getting expelled from your community, things that you just had no say in and they just happened. We struggle with that in big part because the element of choice was taken away from us. So we feel internally like that wasn't fair, that wasn't right, that wasn't. And the other type of change we struggle with, I think, is the changes we need to make because to live an authentic life, because we feel like we have to revolutionize our life in a way, and that's really scary. We feel like it's like a rebirth, like something new is coming out, and you don't know if you can handle it, and you don't know if it's the right thing for you to do. So I heavily focused on those two changes. And or two types of changes, and just like went right in.
I mean, I love how the book is broken up in those three elements. And I also loved how you started with why change is so hard, because change is hard. And it's interesting. I feel like in some ways, change is like romanticized. Like we're always seeking ways that we can, I don't know. I'm just thinking of like scrolling through Instagram. It's here's how you make your morning routine better. Here's how you can dress better, do your makeup better. Like all these changes are very romanticized, but then when it comes down to these big changes or even small changes, we do get stuck in so many ways. And so I know you list five reasons why change is so hard in your book, but maybe if you could just walk through a few of those as to what stops us from embracing change, which again, I think a lot of us up like in our minds think is very exciting and good for us. But then when it comes time to do it, we're like, no, I don't want to do it.
Yes. So I have five reasons why change is hard, and I'll talk about two that to me are major ones. The first one is very simple. Change is hard because we want it to be easy. We want to change our lives, but we don't want to go through the changes that will lead to that change. We want things to be different, but when we're confronted with the truth of what it is that we have to do, it feels like an uphill battle that maybe we're not ready for. We're very scared. We're scared that it might not be, if it's a change we're choosing, we're scared that it might not lead us to the right destination. If it's a change that happened to us, we're afraid that maybe if I accept it, then that's what makes it real, and maybe I can't survive it. Like, I don't want to live in a reality where this change exists, which is when we're in denial. So we want that change in our lives to live authentically. But when we know what we have to do, the bonds that we have to break, and the environments we need to walk away from, and the patterns in behavior and in speaking to ourselves and in perceiving the world, when we know all of that has to change, it's so difficult because you hear people say things like, that's just who I am. Like, I can't change the fact that I'm an empath. I can't change the fact that I'm kind. And I used to say that too until I started saying, yeah, you know what? I can't change the fact that I'm an empathetic person. And I can't change the fact that I am somebody who always will choose kindness. But I can change where I direct that based on whether it's welcomed, based on whether it's deserved, based on whether it's been proven to me that it's going to be honored. So yeah, you're right. If you're on a journey toward change, let's say you want to change being a people pleaser, you'll get that resistance that's like, we can't say no, because that's, we're not somebody who says no. You start hearing all those voices. And so you have to ask the part of you that feels it can't survive you saying no, What's your biggest fear? Let's sit and have a conversation. Like you're having tea with the part of you that says, I can't imagine saying no. It's not necessarily just saying no, but when you don't people please anymore, when you're asked to do something, when you're expected to do something where that's not something that you would want to do, but you just don't want to disappoint the people around you, and you give them some kind of a hint or you set a boundary that says, I won't be doing that. So ask the part of you that says, we won't survive if we do that. What is its biggest fear? And I would bet anything for most people, it would be fear of abandonment or fear of disappointing the people that you love and care about, which also ties to that fear of abandonment, because you think maybe if they're disappointed in me, they're going to leave me and walk away. So once you uncover that attachment wound that you have, you need to reflect on the fact that we as humans have two needs, authenticity and connection. So you start speaking to yourself by saying, okay, well, I understand that the reason that my body is resisting this change of no longer being a people pleaser is because I'm afraid that being myself will cost me the connection with the people I love the most. I understand that. And then you can say, but if that connection is based on me not being myself, then is it really a connection? You start by understanding the part of you that's really scared and really terrified and what it's scared of. And then you start having a conversation where you're giving it confirmation that it's going to be okay, because the people who genuinely love you and care about you will never condition their connection with you on you abandoning yourself. And it starts clicking in
Absolutely.
over time. So that's the approach I would use when you feel like that change is just so hard. Have the conversation with the parts of you that are scared, that are uncertain, that are resisting, because you're not going to find the answer outside of you. You're not going to find it in a book. You're not going to find it in a podcast. The answer is inside of you. So the other reason change is hard, which I think many people don't want to admit, is it breaks the reality that we are living in. So we want to make the change, but we want everything around us to stay the same. But sometimes when you make a change in life, part of that change is what it takes away with it. It's like, imagine a tree that has a whole bunch of leaves on it, and the change is maybe a little bit of wind, and the wind blows and some leaves will stay, but some will fall, and some will fall and they'll stay nearby, but some of them will just completely fly away. And that's what's going to happen with the people in your life. That's what's going to happen with certain patterns. That's what's going to happen with certain routines that you had. What's going to happen in certain environments and just certain aspects of your life. You're going to lose a lot of things, but you are creating new space for new growth. So many of us, we don't want to break that reality that we are living in. And that's what we struggle with when we start sensing that our environment is changing, that the perception that other people of us that we really care about, their perception of us is really changing. We go back to on that change that we chose for ourselves because we think, let me salvage all of this. So those are the two big things I think most of us struggle with. We want change to be easy, and we don't want a break in the reality that we live in. But for change to happen, we need to embrace the fact that it's difficult, because that's just an indication that it is that big of a change, and embrace the fact that the world around you sometimes has to break and fall apart for you to come back together with yourself. And especially if you coming back to yourself is threatened by the world around you, that world around you definitely needs to break and fall apart.
If you are a listener of this podcast, you know I warn about how your phone can either be a great tool or a huge obstacle when it comes to getting over your breakup. Instead of spending time on your phone trying to figure out what your ex is up to, why not spend some time engaging in a super fun mystery game that will help take your mind off your breakup? June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game with a captivating detective story taking you back to the glamour of the 1920s with a diverse cast of characters. Each new scene takes you further through a thrilling murder mystery story that sets the main protagonist, June Parker, on a quest to solve the murder of her sister and uncover her family's many secrets. I am such a big mystery and puzzle fan, so this game has been so fun for me to get into. When I'm looking for a little escape from reality during the day or a way to relax that doesn't involve social media, it's been so fun to use my brain in a new way by diving into June's captivating quest and engaging my sense of observation to find the hidden clues. Discover your inner detective when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It is so important to share your thoughts and feelings while going through a breakup, especially if it's something you're feeling any guilt or shame around. I know whenever I'm struggling with a certain thought or situation and I keep it to myself, it gets heavier and heavier and feels harder and harder to manage. I truly believe we are as sick as our secrets. Therapy has always been a safe space for me to have a judgment-free zone to get things off my chest. Whether it's something from my past, a current struggle, or something I'm anxious about in the future, I always feel lighter when I'm able to share something that feels scary. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/heartbreak today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/heartbreak. Since getting sober over 11 years ago, most of my friends don't drink. And last month at my birthday dinner, we were going around the table talking about our favorite non-alcoholic drink. And almost everyone at the table was talking about how much they love Recess, me included. Not only is Recess Mood a delicious drink, Strawberry Rose is my favorite, but they also have Raspberry Lemon, which is so good, Lime Citrus, and more. It's made with real fruit, it's only 20 calories, and it comes with functional ingredients like stress-balancing adaptogens and mood-lifting magnesium, so it can also bring me a much, much needed moment of peace. So whether you're like me and are always on the hunt for functional and tasty non-alcoholic drinks, or you're just looking for something healthy to unwind at the end of the day, Recess Mood should be your go-to. You deserve a healthier way to unwind. Head to takearecess.com/heartbreak and get 15% off Recess Mood, your go-to alcohol replacement.
Yeah, just looking at this through the lens of breakup and people, you know, coming out of breakups, the first one of change being hard when we want it to be easy. This is just such something that I get a lot from people when they want to change the type of partner that they're seeking after a breakup. Okay. You know, there's this pattern of, I'll speak for myself, choosing partners that are emotionally unavailable. Mm. And so for me, it's like, I just want to be able to choose someone different, but that's not it. That's not it at all. It's okay. I have to get to a place where I recognize that I don't feel worthy of being with someone who is emotionally available. Okay, where does that come from? How can I start working on the beliefs that I hold about myself? It'd be so great if I could just be like, okay, I'm just not going to choose people who can't commit to me anymore, but I can't just do that, you know? So I feel like there's so many underlying things with that, with change. And it seems like it would just be, I'm someone who's in like long-term recovery from alcoholism. And there's this thing where they will say, you know you have a problem with drinking, just stop drinking. You know, and I would get that from people too, is if you know you have a problem, just change that. But it's not that simple at all. There's so much to that. So I think a lot of people try to make a change. Mm-hmm. It's a lot harder. And then they stop there. Yeah. Right. Do you feel like that's the common kind of path that people take?
Absolutely. I think I want to go back to what you said about emotional availability, unavailability, and you choosing it, because you obviously aren't choosing emotional unavailability. You obviously aren't going for that. You obviously aren't consciously saying, that's what I want. There's a part of you that learned the dynamics of that. There's a part of you that sees that as your familiar. You know how to survive it. And I've been saying this in multiple interviews, and I think it's a great way to think about it. We always say, better the devil you know. So let's say you got to know somebody, like in your case, and they turned out to be emotionally unavailable with time. You've dealt with emotionally unavailable people in the past. You know how to fix things. You know how to sense people's tone and know when you can say something and when you can't. You have that self-compassionate approach of showing somebody that they are safe with you and that they could open up to you. You know how to do that. So you do it because it's part of what you are used to. It's just like a chapter in the book of your life that you're like, I've mastered that. I know how to do it.
Even though it leads to pain
Doesn't
and like
matter. It
not,
doesn't matter because your conscious choice isn't, I'm choosing pain. Your conscious choice is, I'm choosing what feels comfortable. And even though that comfort isn't really comfortable, the comfort is in the predictability. It's in the, I know how to get through this. I know how to survive this. Just think of the first time you did something that was just such a huge, big risk in your life. I don't know. It could be swimming for some people. It could be ballet for some people. I don't know. But just think of some, like, very first time you're just like, I don't know how to move. I don't know how to breathe underwater. I don't know. It's just this big thing. And then the more and more it happens, the more you're like, yeah, there's struggles, but I know how to do it. And I know I can survive it. And it's the same thing with that situation. So I would say, don't be hard on yourself for choosing emotional unavailability because you're not consciously choosing it. You are consciously surviving. You are consciously following certain patterns in your life because it feels like the air you breathe. It's not like you're being put in a place where this toxic air that you can't breathe, that you're like, oh, I can't be here. You're like, I know everything. I know. And the only constant, I was going to say, welcome home. The analogy I use in The Only Constant is imagine you're taking a certain road every single morning to work, and then one day you're faced with a brand new road where the stop signs don't look the same and the street lights don't look the same, and you don't know where to go if you want to eat, and you don't know where to go if you get a flat tire or who to call. Everything works differently. Even though the original road you used to take maybe had construction and had all of these, and it took forever to get to work, you know you're gonna get to work. You know, if you leave a little bit early. So that's the same thing with what you said, choosing emotional unavailability. So I give yourself compassion and say, what I was choosing really was to feel safe. And there's two different definitions of safety that I get people to reflect on. The definition of safety that's protective, like I'm safe because I know how to protect myself in this environment or in this emotional unavailability. And there's a kind of safety that's expansive where it's like I can fully be myself and express myself in a way that shows my core and my authenticity and my vulnerability, and I will be accepted and celebrated. So protective safety is the one usually where it's like better the devil you know. And this one is more like better the peace you haven't known yet, better the health. Better the emotional availability you don't know yet. And so, for any person who is pondering changing a certain pattern that they always fell into, I would say you absolutely need to start with being compassionate with the part of you that says, I go for this, I choose this, or I've always done this in my life. Well, we always go for love, we go for respect, we go for consideration. That's our intention. We want what that story that we all have. For every person, it's different, but you know, there's a few stories that I think most people are bound by for their whole lives. I don't deserve love. I don't deserve to succeed in certain ways. I don't deserve to be part of something. We all have those big themes of stories. And so, what we go for is that one thing that we think we inherently don't deserve? That's what you're going for. That's what. So remind yourself of what your intentions were and imagine having a conversation with every version of you that chose emotional unavailability, every one of you. Sit with them and say, I know how difficult this must be, and I know that you're seeing certain signs, and there's still a part of you that's hoping that if you try hard enough, you're not going to reach the same ending you reached in the past. I know that, and I know what you're going for. I know you're not choosing this emotional unavailability. And there's a, that's how self-forgiveness happens. I would say you need to start with that to understand why you've always fell into the past patterns. And then you say, we're going to be experiencing new things. We're going to be uncertain about what the future holds if we have different standards. We're going to, if we project ourselves differently into the world, we're going to get a different reaction from the world around us. So if you've always been somebody who's like a wallflower who just blends into the environment and you don't really stand for anything and you don't stand out in any way, even though you know you stand out, you just don't let that part of you shine, it's going to be so hard to move from the wall to the seat,
yeah,
to a seat at the table, you know? So you tell yourself those things. It's going to be very hard. But, and there's one question I ask in The Only Constant, what if the safety net appears after you jump? What if after you take that risk of trying something new, of projecting yourself into the world in a new way, of demanding certain things that you want in a different way, what if instead of thinking, I'm going to fail, I'm not going to survive this, I'm not going to be able to get through with that change, that safety net appears and you're caught. And maybe that safety net is you. It's your inner wisdom. It's your trust for yourself. It's your ability to get through things and figure things out. You need to start with self-compassion and continue with self-compassion and patience and gentleness. And remember, you have trusted so many people in your life to lead you to that place where you feel whatever it is that you're going for, love, respect, success, consideration, being a part of something. You've trusted other people to lead you places and they've all, in a way, let you down because you're not there yet. So why don't you trust yourself? Give yourself a chance. You're not going to be perfect at it. Nobody ever was, but you still gave them a chance. So why don't you give yourself a chance? Trust yourself. And you know, it's a different level of exposure that you have when you decide that you're actually going to change something in your life. Because it's much easier to say, well, I was told that that was the way. And I followed that and it didn't work. And in a way, you're taking away your sense of responsibility because you're like, that person was leading me there and it didn't work out. But then when you decide I'm the one who's leading, you're basically saying, I'm going to put it all out on the table. Now you're actually going to see how I make decisions and you're actually going to see how I set boundaries and you're actually going to see what I stand for and what my character is and what my red lines are. And so we're so afraid sometimes of exposing who we really are. Even though we really want to fully be seen for who we are. Like even people who are emotionally unavailable, somebody who's emotionally unavailable wants to be seen. They want to be looked at exactly as they are with all their flaws, with all the things that they're ashamed of and feel like they're okay. But there's so much shame there. So we are afraid that if we expose ourselves in a certain way, that not only is the other person going to see all the beautiful and amazing parts, but that they're also going to see the ugly ones. And maybe they'll abandon us because of those ugly parts. And so then we shield our entire selves because we don't want that. So that's another big fear with taking leadership in your own life, is that level of exposure where now people might find out, oh, like maybe you struggle with being patient. Maybe you have a fear of not knowing for certain that certain things are going to be done. And so you struggle with uncertainty. You struggle. You're very afraid of that. You're like, I'd rather have somebody tell me how to do this and follow their lead than pave my own path. It's just a lot harder to do that. So I think going back to your question, when we're going for a certain change in patterns and we sense that resistance and how difficult it is, we might relapse, which is fine. And I always say in The Only Constant, I actually have one section where I say, avoid labeling things as good or bad. So avoid saying, I went for this and then I went back on it. Because the going for it is a step forward. Just the going for it. It doesn't mean that if you went back, like you said, so how long did you like struggle with alcoholism, for example.
6 years,
Six
probably. And then now I've been sober for
That's
11, but
amazing.
thank you. But yeah, I mean, an interesting thing in like the realm of recovery is this idea of a relapse. And it's, people put so much on, okay, I was sober for 2 years and then I relapsed and I lost all that time. And it's like,
No, you
no, you didn't
didn't.
at all.
No, exactly.
So I love that idea of being able to, and I see this a lot with people who come out of like toxic
Yes.
relationships and they try dating and they're faced with someone who is toxic again. And they're like, I can't believe I did this again. And it's like, no, you, first of all, you're recognizing it so much sooner. Like there's just so much progress in that. And it's, I think change doesn't necessarily have to be binary or black and white.
No.
I always encourage people to look at, like, instead of seeing two breakups as two failures, it's like, okay, what happened in the middle of those things? Like, what happened in between? How did you change in between those things?
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean that, like, you go from a breakup to, I need to find the absolute love of my life next, otherwise, I'm a failure. That's
Exactly.
not how it
It's not
works.
how it works. And that's why I asked you so about relapsing. So I hear that language a lot with addiction, where people judge people for not following through on going sober or not using certain drugs. And I hate the approach that is very shame-based, that's like, that's a choice you're making. And it's like, we all have different types of addiction in our lives. And the reason we are addicted to certain things is not, it's not a malicious thing. It eases a certain pain. It eases a certain fear that we have inside of us. It calms the noise in some way. No person is really choosing to hurt themselves. They're choosing to soothe something inside of them. So that's why I say don't label things as good or bad. So yeah, the example that you just brought up with with one person, like you broke up with this person and then you went through another breakup and you're like, why does this keep happening to, like, why did I go through two or three or four? It's like opening a bag of Skittles and just putting your hand in there and you get one and it's yellow and you're like, I don't like the yellow ones. And then you put your hand in again without looking because you can't look. That's how life works. And if there's a yellow one again, you're like, why did I get a yellow one again? It's like, that doesn't mean that you're picking the yellow one. It just means that you, life threw that your way. And now you've become better at saying, I don't like these. You can become better at getting rid of them instead of saying, maybe I'll try it this time. I might like it. Or, you know? So the approach really needs a lot of self-compassion. A lot of self-compassion and not judging ourselves for the things that life throws our way and the things that people do to us and the things that people did to us in our past that continue to trigger us in a certain way. Just to look at ourselves as we are and stop saying, why is this continuing to happen to me? And when we do ask that question, understand that the part of us that's asking that question has the best intention. It wants to protect us from future pain, because maybe if we ask that question and figure out why it is that this keeps happening, maybe we could protect ourselves from it. But instead of asking, why is this happening, say, this is happening. This is my reality. I accept it as it is. I'm going to move forward from it. So that's what people get so stuck on, closure. People get so stuck
And
on, I need to know why.
that's what I hear all the time is like this idea of not being able to accept the breakup. But I remember someone told me accepting does not mean approving. You can accept something that it happened and not be happy necessarily that it did happen in at that time, but you're going to choose to move forward anyway. I think that idea of, I mean, you talk a lot about this idea of radical self-acceptance, of just like accepting you for where you're at,
Yes.
not judging yourself, and how that, I mean, to me, what I got from your book was that really is a huge key in being able to accept change. I don't know. I find that stuff very comforting. If I can accept myself and have radical self-acceptance, it doesn't necessarily matter what's going on outside. Like, yeah, there will be things that happen that make me sad or make me angry. But if I can just fully accept myself for who I am and know that I'm doing the best I can with what I have, then I have so much more authority over my
For
life.
sure. And a big part of radical acceptance of something or of ourselves is to validate that there are certain things that we would never choose for ourselves as part of whatever it is that happened or as part of whatever it is that we are. Like, for example, I radically accept myself, but I also have a chronic illness. I have Crohn's. So part of radical acceptance is to say, even though there's this one thing that I would never choose for myself, even though I have a certain pattern of maybe when I'm triggered in a certain way, I might spiral and not be in character anymore. I accept those parts of me because I know that they're still growing and evolving. And it's the same thing with radically accepting anything in our lives, like a breakup, a separation, a divorce, being laid off work. Accepting it, just like you said, doesn't mean it's okay. That's why I said one of the main elements and the only constant of radical acceptance is validating for yourself what you would want that reality to be. So you could say, I didn't want that separation, but I accept it as in, I've now understood that this is part of my reality. And the way I get people to visualize it is imagine this big, ugly thing that happened in your life that you really don't want. And you're pushing it away because you think if you accept it, then it now it's real and you have to live your life as if it is real. So there's something that resists it. Your whole being wants to like push it away, but really you're just pushing away the time that you actually heal from it. So I say, imagine you've pushed it into a corner in your room and you don't want to deal with it. And just imagine walking up to it. And instead of continuing to push it away, to hold it and embrace it and say, I really didn't want you to happen. And it really hurts that X, Y, and Z. And you bring up this fear and that belief and that whatever. But I accept you as part of my reality. Like you are part of my reality. And I know that avoiding you is me not wanting to feel the pain that you've elicited in my life. But for me to move forward, I need to unravel all of this. I need to take all of this apart and understand what it is that it taught me about myself and the world and what it is that it's taught me moving forward that I need to do with my life and how I approach the people around me. So imagine the one thing that you've been pushing away so much. And instead of pushing it away just for a little bit, truly imagine, I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it. Imagine holding it and embracing it, because it is either currently protecting you from something, or when it happened, there's something it protected you from. And maybe just tapping into it will reveal something to you. So, yeah.
No, this is incredible. And that last part you were talking about with, I mean, again, thinking about it through the lens of a breakup, of my thought is that everyone can get over breakups as long as they're able to accept that it happened. Mm-hmm. I think the ones that stick with us are the ones where we're not accepting that it happened, or we're not accepting the person that ended it. And we think we need to like stay connected to them to teach them a lesson or teach us a lesson or whatever that looks like. But if we can accept that it has ended, I think everyone can move forward. But I love that process you walked through of how can I see that at some point it will be revealed to me that I was being protected from something, mm-hmm. or currently being protected from something. And even going back to what you were saying in the very beginning about things falling, or like your world having to kind of come apart, mm-hmm. when you go through a change. And so many people will come to me and say, my neediness drove my partner away, or this part about me drove my partner away. No. And it's like, oh, yeah, exactly. That's not what happened. You could have stayed in that for the rest of your life and not been authentically yourself, which is a huge, like you said, human need that we have. Or you're going to end up resenting yourself, resenting them to stay small in this relationship. So sometimes you have to accept that once you come into your own, mm-hmm. which I think we're going to do for our whole lives, like we're
Absolutely,
always going to be
yeah.
changing and growing. And that's a lot of times what happens in relationships is like, I'm changing. My partner's not, that's not conducive anymore. So the relationship ends. It doesn't necessarily mean that someone's wrong or someone's right. It just means like that is an inevitable, like what you said, the only constant in life is that we're going to change.
Yes.
And so sometimes that causes things that we thought we loved and thought would last forever to fall apart.
Absolutely. And the last thing I'll say on that is you can sit there and tell yourself all of these things and logically say, maybe it's not my neediness that pushed them away. Maybe you're right. Maybe it's not that I was a certain way. Maybe it was just meant to happen and people grow apart and blah, blah, blah. You can say those things. But if you don't feel that pain, you're not going to get over it. There is pain there. So we try to logic our way through pain.
Yeah.
You can't logic your way through pain. You can understand. You can try to like be mentally mature about it. But emotional maturity isn't about listening to what your mind says and saying, I'm not, therefore, I'm not going to feel it. It's like you're hurt. Like you're grieving a future you saw with someone. You're grieving past versions of you that presented themselves in certain ways and thought something of the world and of this relationship. You're grieving your current life. What am I doing? Who am I? You're going through all of that. So when people present that kind of messaging, I see a lot of emotional unavailability when they stop it right there. And it's only on the logical level, because I'm like, you are stopping yourself from diving into that deep, deep valley of pain that's there. It's there because if they really meant something to you, then you're going to be sad that they're no longer there. You're going to be upset, and all these resentments that were presented throughout the relationship that maybe you didn't deal with, they're all going to come up and you're going to have to deal with them. So I say, yes, try to, you can understand it logically, let your logic guide you, but also don't let it stop you from feeling your emotions.
I love that. Yeah. Cause I mean, I think again, any change is going to come with a lot of underlying emotions with it. So I think that's a great message to end on. I feel like I could talk to you for forever. So I'm so grateful for your time. Hopefully we can have you, you said you're writing another book. Hopefully we can have you back.
Yeah,
for the next
I would love
book,
that.
But
yeah.
It's been such an honor to have you on, and I hope everyone goes out and gets The Only Constant. I loved it. I feel like it's a book that I will continue to refer back to on certain parts, so which I love. I love books that I can keep coming back to. So thank you so much again, Najwa.
Thank you.
And yeah, it's been an honor to talk to you.
Same.
I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you loved it, I hope you'll leave a review and share with your friends. If you're not already following me on Instagram, head to @yourbreakupbestie, where I'm sharing new content almost every day. To join our Facebook group, Healing Hearts Club, where you can connect with thousands of people from all over the world going through breakups, head to the link in the show notes. And don't forget to check out my online courses for more in-depth help through your healing journey. I always end these episodes the same way, reminding you to be nice to yourself, stay connected with loved ones, and the biggest reminder is that this too shall pass. I promise.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.